CEO and the co-founder of Nominal. We're building software to accelerate testing and operations for hardware systems. I grew up in a really, really big Navy family. My uncle was an admiral, and I was like, that's what I want to do. I'm going to be an admiral. I served 8 years in the Navy. I was a submarine officer. I loved it. It was really formative to my experiences, but I think I realized, like, to have an impact at the pace and scale that I thought was relevant to sort of affect the landscape, it was actually to do it in the private sector.
This is All Quiet on the Second Front, a podcast where boring conversations around defense tech and national security come to die. Join me, Tyler Sweat, and my Second Front homies as we dismantle the mundane and cut through the bureaucratic bullshit to demystify the world of defense tech. But be warned, this is not a typical government podcast. You ready to get weird? What's up, everyone? I'm your host, Tyler Sweat. Welcome to another episode of All Quiet on the Second Front, the podcast where boring defense talk comes to die. Finally pinned down the elusive Cam McCord here. So really excited to, one, have you here. Two, just get to share more of your story and your perspective. I find every time I get to share a room with you, I learn something and I come away looking at the world a little different. So thanks for making some time to swing by, brother.
Tyler, you're too kind. No, very excited. I've been looking forward to this moment for quite some time, so very excited to be here.
So sort of open it up, give the people a little bit of, you know, who are you, what are you up to now, sort of what's your story? So, you know, give the people what they yearn for, a little once over the world.
Yeah, awesome. So right now, I'm the CEO and the co-founder of Nominal. We'll, I imagine, touch on that a lot more, but we're building software to accelerate testing, testing and operations for hardware systems. But I have worn a lot of different hats, which is something that has been really interesting in this sort of defense technology space. But I actually go way, way back to the beginning. But I grew up in a really, really big Navy family. So sorry, I'm the, you know.
Hey,
Navy,
it's, you know, takes all types.
Yep. Really big Navy family, long lineage of naval officers. So long story short is, like, that's what I thought I was going to do forever. Like, my uncle was an admiral, and I was like, that's what I want to do. I'm going to be an admiral. And I think, like many of us in this space have realized, it's not the technological landscape it was when my uncle was serving. It's not the adversarial threat that it was. And I think, you know, I served 8 years in the Navy. I was a submarine officer. I loved it. It was really formative to my experiences. But I think I realized, like, to have an impact at the pace and scale that I thought was relevant to sort of affect the landscape, it was actually to do it in the private sector. And so got out, as I said, wore a bunch of hats, did some time at Anduril pretty early, very formative, saw what great looks like, saw what scale looks like. Did some time as a VC. I sort of joked it was my time on the dark side. Yeah. But I loved it. I learned a lot. And then worked at a couple other companies, Saildrone, Applied Intuition, known well in this space, and then founded Nominal, sort of taking a lot of those learnings. So
I mean, you've kind of worked, you list off some of the companies on the resume, I mean, even the fund, right? It's kind of a who's who in the industry.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so coming from that experience, right, being a submarine officer, being passionate about the community, having the Anduril's, the Applied, right, all of those, What then causes you, like, what opportunity do you see, or maybe gap, that brings you to Nominal?
Yep. No, absolutely. I think it's, really, I wanted to start a company for a long, long time, but didn't want to jump into something, you know, too early. And so Nominal is the summation of a lot of observation, and I think the fusion of a big technology need, and then something also that can be a really big, vibrant business. And I think you obviously need both. On the technology side, I think, you know, seeing at commercial companies, and go back to Anduril, where a lot of that early inspiration came from, companies that look at testing, T&E, to use the DoD parlance, but testing, evaluation, validation of new hardware systems as a competitive advantage. Like, they think of it solely as, hey, if I can do this better, faster, cheaper than someone else trying to put a product into market, I'm going to win, right? And that, I think, all the way back to space, like, this has just changed. This landscape has changed. And so seeing that, hey, software for testing, managing this type of data, it used to be thought of as something just like almost like a necessary evil. Like I got to do this before I push the product out, make sure it works. And I think that whole paradigm has changed. And I think I just saw that at early Anduril. And then when I was at Lux, I had the chance to see, you know, that was an N-of-1 at Anduril, but I had this chance at Lux to see, okay, what are like 100 different companies in the hard tech space that are building these hardware products? Like, oh, actually, like, they're all starting to look at the world that way. But they don't really have the software themselves. It's hard to build it internally. It's hard to maintain it. People are sort of piecemeal putting together, you know, different things. So the technology need is certainly there. And then I was always excited. I'm a business guy as well. And so thinking through, like, is there an actual business here? Like, a lot of people can have amazing technology solutions, but, like, can you actually build a product around it, create some defensibility? Can you scale it? Do people want to buy it? And I think Lux was a great chance to just have 100 conversations with people and do the classic, you know, if I build this, would you want it?
Yep.
To not, you know, overcomplicate it. And so, yeah, I mean, that's Nominal is really those two things coming together at a time, I think, you know, reindustrialization, like, you can't be anywhere in DC here, like, and not hear that word. And I think it's so true. Like, there's a lot of tailwinds right now for where we're building.
As you look into the government and think about Tina, you know, we've alluded to it a little bit that a lot of times it's maybe antiquated or it's relegated to, you know, a checklist or some form. You know, one, where do you see sort of opportunity? And two, you know, is from a Nominal standpoint, like, who do you look to as, you know, maybe the lighthouse or sort of the North Star in the government when you think about TNA?
No, awesome. Yeah, I think it's really interesting. You know, the big, we're talking about tailwinds and trends, like, the big thing that's happening across every program is the expectation for the timeline of delivery is shrinking, right? And we can, 2027, the pacing challenge, like, that timeline is immutable. Like, we have an adversary and we are trying to do everything we can to be ready for that. And so programs that used to be 15 years in development, 10 years in development, 8 years in development, we're now trying to field prototypes and do things in 12 months, 18 months, 24 months. So that puts a ton of pressure on programs in general, but where it really the crunch is being felt is the testers, the testing community. And they often don't get a lot of the love. Like, the first chunk of money goes to, you know, the program, and then a lot of it ends up going on to the prime or the vendor who's building it. And so I think there's a lot of need there that I think we're sort of trying to seize on. But it also goes back to, like, incentive structures. Traditionally, with the way, you know, the primes would do contracting, there's not a lot of incentive to streamline the testing process because they're just getting paid.
Like, it's the old social program problem, right? If you're incentivized to spend more hours trying to cure homelessness in San Francisco, you're going to spend a lot of money curing homelessness, and shockingly, the problem's still going to fucking exist.
Yep, exactly. So, we see a lot of times, like, you know, I need to validate this new drone or this new aircraft system. Sort of starting with the, like, okay, well, I have to test these 100 things. It's like, well, wait, like, is there a way to actually, you know, test more effectively, more efficiently, like, move test points? And so you go back to a lot of that. And a lot of that, like, we're, you know, I think in a good way, we're, say, ruffling some feathers there, in just in terms of, hey, like, using our software, a lot of our framing is, like, using our software, we talk about the ability to just, like, test more effectively and efficiently. So actually search across all this historical data and justify that you might not need to run another test.
Yeah.
And that's a complex, you know, concept to people that, I mean, these tests are millions of dollars. And if you can actually go in, like, it depends, like, who's getting paid that million, what does it mean?
That's where the incentive problem comes in. Because it's easy to throw up, like, you know, like, the eat the primes and they're bad. And I'm like, the duty kind of, they're Pavlov's dog. Like, if you've incentivized them to behave a certain way in a contract structure, and when you bring in, like, an orthogonal disruptor that materially degrades whatever you've incentivized them to do, you can't then clutch your pearls when they don't behave. They're not like, this is great.
Totally. Yeah. I think it's really, like, a lot of, we sort of look at, like, I talked about this, the commercial industry looking at testing more as a competitive advantage. Like, there's been a really big, I think a big and growing delta a little bit on, on the sort of the government side, ability to do the type of testing at the pace they need to be able to receive commercial products and make sure that they work. Like, that still is a government function. Like, we and I think that's the right way to do it. Like, we want to test and validate these systems in a way that sometimes only government ranges, you know, government data, high side, like, there's a lot of complexities there that the government still does. But a lot of our framing there is we want to arm the government, the testers, with the ability to, like, do that type of validation. And I think a lot right now, at the pace things are being pushed at, there's a lot of just taking whatever commercial industry is handing you and sort of saying, like, well, I don't have the ability to do this.
Yeah.
So, and I think that is equally dangerous. You don't want all of this bureaucratic testing regime and stuff, but it can't be nothing.
Yeah.
It's like, how do we get the right amount? How do we dial it in for the right use case?
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Quick break before we dive back into the All Quiet excitement. Wanted to mention our flagship event this year, Offset Symposium. It's back. It's bigger. It's better. New speakers, new partners, new location. It's going to be at Mellon Auditorium, May 15th in Washington, D.C. We're going to have policymakers, technologists, investors, defense company operators, and more. Speakers such as Senator Markwayne Mullins, Justin Finelli, a number of mission-ready tech demos from different technology companies will be out there. Goal is going to be to focus on mission-driven conversations, aligning folks from theory to practice and sort of making it real. We've got a special code for listeners to the podcast. If you type in the code AQ2F, that's Alpha Quebec 2 Foxtrot, that'll give you free registration. We'll link in the show notes, but secondfront.com/offset. Hope to see you there, and glad to be power and software for the free world together. Cheers. So you talk about sort of the growing... And you combine two things here, right? Your experience sort of both sides, I mean, all three sides of the table, right? Like, in uniform, as an allocator, and as an operator.
Yeah.
And then watching sort of the changing, maybe the power shifts, balance power, or however you want to think about it, between T&E and access, interoperability, yeah, things like that. As you look out at the market right now, like, yeah, what's the state of play? Because I think everyone's trying to figure out, you know, yep, change is clearly afoot, but yeah, what's the state of play?
No, I think it's really, we see, we sort of have really focused on different, I think, technology areas where there is critical need. And that's where, Lux surface area, like, that's where interesting, yeah, things are happening, and it's good for nominal. Some of the obvious areas here, like hypersonics, right, is a really, really big one. I think from a just critical national, priority, no one's arguing with that. And it's an area where, I always give this little, like, anecdote, like, it's an area where nominal's really excited to be working in. And I think once we sort of learn more and more about some of the bottlenecks in our hypersonic testing, ability, there's many, right? Manufacturing, production, like, all of those things are very, very real. But software plays a really big piece. Yeah. And so I think understanding, like, hey, we're kind of, like, limited on our ability to, like, hypersonic throughput, like, test components and things, purely just because we can't analyze the data after a test.
Yeah.
Like, that's still the real world. Like, it's Excel. It's old software. Yep. And so, yep, and hypersonics is an area where I think we've had a lot of good support. You asked for, like, who are we excited about and stuff. In a really good way, like, TRMC, Test Resource Management, yep, Center, the organization charter with a lot of this, like, there's been a lot of really good, I think, forward thinking coming out of there, and I've, yeah, been impressed by that. And then the other one that, people talk about a lot, but, like, the CCA program.
Yeah.
Like, that is one where, by definition, we are trying to break the paradigm and, yeah, move faster than we ever have. And that's a really interesting one, too, because you talk about commercial companies looking at testing as an advantage. Like, it's been really good for nominal to have a lot of those conversations too about anyone involved in that CCA sort of value chain. Like, how can you move faster?
Yeah.
How can you? So, yeah.
What do you tell, other founders and operators who come say, hey, you've seen it all in this, your rotations around, like, what guidance, what advice, yep, maybe what mistakes to avoid?
Yeah. I mean, I think I'd say two points there. One is, in a funny way, the time on the dark side as an investor, I think, like, investors are getting a lot smarter and a lot savvier in this space. And to give a little bit of a, you know, the hotter take, like, I think there's investors that are actually getting really, really smart on it. And I think in general, there's sort of a sense of maybe thinking on the investment side, you might know more about the space than you do. And those are two different things as a founder. If you're approaching it, you gotta know. But I think advice I give, is I think it's not only, you know, 5 years ago, and you know this better than most, Tyler, like 5 years ago, just doing the thing, like just getting a contract, just getting something over the line, like used to be the differentiator.
Yep.
It just was, it's so hard to do. It still is hard to do.
Yeah.
But I now, because there's more activity in the space, doing it fast, I think matters. And so that's a big differentiator. And there's this whole big laundry list of infrastructure, I kind of call it, that one needs if they want to credibly build a business selling to DoD and Second Front, right? Like you guys have built an amazing business around being a piece of that infrastructure. If you're going to sell software, like you need it. It's a fast solution that works, right? Like there's this whole list of those compliance, you know, types of things. And so being able to show that you can do that really fast, I think kind of matters. That's maybe point one. And then I think something you and I have chatted a lot about that I'm passionate about is the talent in the space.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting, you know, sitting on the Lux side, you used to have lots of conversations about like defensibility in a technological moat and talent and looking at, you know, Stanford AI PhDs is like, if you can get a bunch of those around the table, like you can, and that's a very real thing. I think building technology talent in that way, in this government and defense side space, it's actually the very few humans that know how to do the full gamut of like selling, positioning, building positioning, selling a product into the DoD.
Yeah.
And it's such a small list.
Oh, yeah.
And I think investors are starting to realize that too. And so
it's just so hard to do.
Yeah, it's so hard
to do. It's terrible.
Yeah. It's you're juggling, you know, three things, five things, seven things at once.
Yeah.
And then there's a little bit of, yeah, timing's everything for those things. And so, yeah, those would be, yeah, two pieces of advice, I think. So.
Yeah. I'm going to ask a follow-up to each of those pieces. Mm-hmm. I think that's an interesting sort of one-two. You talk about sort of, you know, investors are getting smarter or sort of think they are, right? Like there's a neat two-part in there.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
you know, as, you know, for folks out there who are thinking about raising or thinking about picking who they want to partner with for sort of the next phase of the business, tips of the trade, tricks on like, how do you sniff that out and, you know, assess that like, hey, just because you know, like the acronym JSIDS doesn't mean you understand how the DoD buys.
Yeah. I think it's, I think it's really interesting. On the positioning front, maybe to answer the first part of that, like, yeah, I think positioning the speed at which you're able to go through things is everything.
Yeah.
Because I think, like any, this is true for the commercial side of, you know, Nominal's business or anyone's business as well. Like there's this expected sort of ramp rate of, you know, building a product and maybe getting the first couple million in ARR, then building some, you know, like I think on the DoD side, there's a similar kind of ramp. And as soon as you can show you are open for business, that's what I kind of call it. There's this moment in time where you're like, I kind of, with the team in Nominal, we are open for business in the DoD. Like we've checked all the boxes, we're compliant, you know, facility clearance, we can work on high side, like all those things. It takes a while, you know, you have appropriations, like you've done one loop of the full sort of cycle, like you're open for business, and then it's just conveying that to investors, I think, is a really good, you know, positioning, and it gets them excited that, hey, now I should, as an investor, expect, it's still lumpy, it still takes time, it's still complex, but like I can expect bigger contracts, some recurring.
There's some gas in the pot. It's been primed a little bit.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, on the, I think the flip side of that too is like, making sure that people still understand like this is really, you know, it's lumpy.
Yeah.
And I think even just like understanding, you know, it's funny, I have lots of conversations with folks these days about people starting, you know, selling contracts and trying to even just convey to an investor what the value of those are is hard. Like and even if you talk to the bigger companies in the space, the Anduril's, the Shields, the Vannevar's, the you know, it's hard for them too. Like you know, it's like there's a million ways to explain what it means that you've booked this amount of revenue on this contract ceiling and here it is in the world, and like here's the risk that might happen, but like we're pretty, you know, like those types of things. And how do you sort of like at the moment in time as an investor like understand what that means? I think is still complex. So
yeah. On the talent side, you need to talk about folks that sort of understand kind of full spectrum, right? Let's say, hey, find one of those, or you are one of those. How do you think about kind of like the next level of that team? Like, how do you, what guidance do you give for folks building out, you know, maybe employee 5 through 10, and then, you know, 25 through 30?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question. And I don't know perfect answers to anything here, but I think a framework that I sort of think about, and this is true with hiring in general at, you know, the company, we're like 55 people, so take it with a grain of salt. Maybe we're growing, but I think, there's a, you can kind of hire for like with extreme growth potential in certain roles, and then, you know, maybe call me old fashioned, but there's some roles where just like you just have to have done it before.
Yeah.
Like you have to, and you still want to see growth potential in that person, but like you're hiring for the things that they have done.
Yeah.
And I think building teams where you have like a really rich mix of those two things, and you just create a lot of overlap.
Yeah.
So it's often, if we're talking about these, you know, this rare, there's 20, 25 people that have done this like full motion. Like if you can get one of those, obviously get them. Build a team.
They're worth their weight in gold.
Yeah. Build a team around them.
Yep.
Arm them with a couple other people who have just like been there, done that.
Yep.
Like you can give them the critical thing and know that it's going to get done.
Yep.
And then, but hire a couple other people that are not from the space. Like we talk about a lot of the diversity here. It's like, it's a lot of people that are veterans. We're both like, I love veterans obviously, but there's a lot of value, I think, in having some people on that team that come from a totally different background.
Okay.
They just want to hustle. They just want to learn. They just want to like get better. And you need those people to learn from those, you know, been there, done that, and be 24 months from now, the folks that like can go out and kind of do that. And so I think there's just not enough people that have been there, done that to sort of fully build those teams. And so I think when you create those incentives, and you know, those people can challenge the status quo a little bit and sort of be like, okay, I know that this is how it worked before, but like, do we really have to do it?
Yeah, it's funny. I've gotten about 10 times more things wrong than right so far. I could write a freaking book on like what not to do. I've struggled, right, you know, finding sort of the anchor I want to find. Hey, cool. And I start to build around it.
Yeah.
I think I know that there's a standard deviation between like experience and, you know, like just true believer will run through walls.
Yeah.
I have found myself on one side, like hiring, you know, it was the old Steve Jobs, right? Like don't hire managers.
Yeah, exactly.
I found myself sort of making that mistake and being like, well, this person's a pro at like managing this process. They should be great.
Yeah.
And I end up, and I can't tell if it's because of like my own personal bias, but I keep falling back to kind of what you're getting at, almost like a tribal kind of squad. Like, give me the hunter or the chief, and then I can put true believers around them. Mm-hmm. Folks will run through walls and they'll figure it out.
Yep. I love it. We at Nominal, we use a lot of the missionaries versus mercenaries.
I like that.
Building a startup from scratch. It's like the first 10 people, like you just need missionaries. Like you need people that believe so fully in the business, and you obviously you need them to be amazingly skilled and talented, all those things. Like you gotta just get 10 unicorns. But I think like as you start to scale, you gotta think a little bit about like where do I and I say missionaries and mercenaries. I think the ideal thing would be get a missionary who has been there, done that. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Very hard to find.
Yep.
There's a correlation, and if it's correlation or causation to be honest, but like between the been there, done that, extremely experienced person at the stage, and then someone who's going to be a little bit more of a mercenary mentality. And so just acknowledging that. Like
the experience in one gives you like a hybrid of the other, though.
It does. Yeah. And so I think like, and it's interesting because I think the missionary is like, that one's, because it's contagious.
Yeah.
It can be. Like, and you want, like you are killing it at culture, I think, if that is contagious.
Yeah.
You can convert a, we're going really deep on this analogy. If you can convert a mercenary over time into being a little missionary, just by proximity, like building those teams, the tribe, like that's the
dream.
That's the dream.
Yeah. I think that is that is the one thing that I have found that is a constant above. Like, it's going to be rocky. Things are going to take longer. They're going to cost more. It's going to be harder.
Yeah.
More things are going to go wrong than go right. But if you put like the right 10 people around a table, I am as convinced as I was 2006 in Afghanistan. Like,
yeah.
10 humans properly, the right 10 people,
yeah,
properly motivated, can overthrow a country. They can do absolutely anything.
Yeah.
Your job is to get the right 10 around,
yeah,
the table.
Oh, yeah, and that's what, I mean, that's what overthrowing a country or building something really, really valuable that,
yeah,
the world cares about for a long time, like,
yeah,
building a company, like,
it's hard. It's super hard.
It's hard.
All right, so as we turn the corner, you know, kind of talked about a bunch of interesting stuff, right? Like, talked T&E policy, sort of state of the department, talked the broader market and, you know, VC savviness and sort of operator engagement with, yep, capital, talked sort of building core teams. You know, you think about one thing you could change. You've got the magic wand, one thing you could change. What do you wave the wand to change and why?
Yeah, I think it's going to be incentives, and I think it is going to, it's I'm going full circle back to it, but like, we have to change the incentive and the risk appetite for these program leaders to be rewarded for doing, like, legitimately rewarded for doing things better, faster, cheaper.
Yeah.
That's a really complex thing, but I think like it, I love it because I think that's what Nominal's product does,
yeah,
right? Like, that we deliver that, and I think we have to change that genuinely. And it comes from the top, I think. Top,
yeah.
Down, in terms of, like, we have to realize those things. Well, our mantra, sort of, we're having these conversations, is like, if you're not willing to invest half a cent on the dollar, like, that's all it, for these big, massive programs, billions of dollars, like, half a cent on the dollar to invest in better software for testing, like, all of the rewards you could reap, like, you're not serious. Like,
yep,
you're not actually serious about,
yeah,
saving money or, yeah.
Well, and that's one of those, you know, you change the PM's incentives that flows down to some of the primes,
yeah,
and integrators, which just changes all the behaviors in the ecosystem.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a net win for national security.
It is. And I think it's like, I'll give the optimistic framing, which is like, I think slowly happening. Like, we're seeing it. I think we're excited about what we're seeing. But those types of things would be,
yeah,
huge.
Like, it's a lot of cautious optimism right now.
Yes.
Like, we're seeing, exactly, the same thing, and I'm like, I don't want to believe, because if they take it away, it's going to make me sad.
Yeah.
Brother, this was as expected. This was awesome. I appreciate the time, brother, the insight, and as always, thanks for being a great friend and partner in the journey.
No, Tyler, could not agree more. This is awesome, and been looking forward for a long time. So,
heck yeah,
always a pleasure.
Thanks for tuning in, everyone. Cheers.